like one of those TV shows where they show a bunch of clips from old episodes.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Calder, joined this week by Basketball Development Officer Nick Mihai. Welcome, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
And Jenna O'Hay, the High Performance Coach for the Vic Metro Women. Welcome, Jenna.
Hello.
What's been going on with both of you two? Excellent. So we'll move into... No, I'm joking.
That's a great... Really put us on the spot there.
Just thought I'd try and mess with you early on. As we go through this, of course, as we go through this, you can follow along on X, Instagram, YouTube. If you're looking for drill content, if you're looking for the podcast, you can find it all on there. You'll be able to find it. Reminder, we've got Coach Wellbeing Month coming up. We'll drop you all the information in October and setting some challenges and tasks for coaches to do in November. Try and move the needle in the right direction towards a little bit of a healthier lifestyle for some of our coaches out there. If there's anything you'd like to talk about, please let us know. We do already have nutrition, sleep, physical well-being and mental well-being covered. But if there's anything else you want in there, by all means, hit us up with that. A little bit of a plug as we talk about Run to Unplug. So on Friday the 24th of October, Luke Lehman will be taking on a 24-hour run around the Mentone Athletics Track from midnight Thursday the 23rd until midnight Friday the 24th to raise awareness and support for Smack Talk and Unplug 24. Here's how you can help be a part of it. You can come down and run a lap. Won't be doing that. Run 10. Won't be doing that. Run 100. Also won't be doing that. You can register to Unplug for 24 hours from social media. smacktalk.com.au/unplug24 I can do that one. Or you can follow along on Instagram at run2unplug. Can also do that one. So I'll contribute on two out of the three, but I'm not running around a track and I'm certainly not doing it for 24 hours.
Second. Also not.
Absolutely not. No. It sounds horrible.
But we're with you in spirit,
good
Luke.
On him.
Yeah, exactly.
Go you, Luke.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll look on for moral support. And that's pretty much all you've got with us, to be perfectly honest. I do appreciate all the Coach Head Out music feedback I've got over the past week. My heart still yearns for the old music, but the people have incorrectly spoken and the new music will be staying. So we are into the Coach Head Out.
The coach shout out. The coach shout out. The coach shout out. The coach shout out. The coach shout out. The coach shout out. The coach shout out. The coach shout out. The coach shout out. The coach shout out.
I'm disappointed in both of you for liking that.
That was so fun.
Yeah, I still like the other music.
I got someone to dance with. I'm really happy now.
Yeah, I see your point, to be honest. But Coach Head Out this week, Jamie O'Donnell from down at Lakes Entrance Basketball Association was down there a couple of weeks ago running a coaching clinic and a coaching course down there. They're doing a great job getting as many coaches as they possibly can through education to try and help out their association in general. So I think we had maybe 25 or so coaches in there for the coaching course and probably 20 to 30 in for the coaching clinic as well. Fantastic to have so many people down there for it. Obviously, Lakes Entrance being logistically difficult for a number of reasons. Like, that's not exactly around the corner for most of them. So any courses we run does tend to be a little bit difficult for them to get to as well. So it was fantastic to have a number of them involved down there. But Jamie is really driving that as their director of coaching down there as well. So fantastic on his end. So this week, we are testing my ability to multitask. And I think we already know how this is going to go poorly. But what we are talking about is this entire episode is effectively a social split talk. We'll try and unpack the clips as we go through them, where it applies in our space, your space, for coaches, for anyone around that, and how it might relate in just what we're doing in that space. So I will warn you now, if either of you want like a story time drop, you're going to need to give me like 15 seconds notice before I go back and try and find where the drop is, but we'll see how we go with it. The first one, Maya Moore, who was just recently inducted into the Hall of Fame and her induction speech. This is just part of that.
Now that I'm in the hall, I feel like I've officially become Auntie Maya. So I'm gonna say a few words to this next generation. I'm gonna own it. I'm Auntie Maya. So listen. I want y'all in the next generation to realize it's natural to wrestle with insecurities and fears as you navigate your sports journey. You have to figure out what motivates you every day when you get up out of bed. And there's a lot of pressure, I think, to be motivated by fear and approach your team and your teammates that way. Fear of sharing the spotlight, fear of looking bad, fear of having to wait your turn and losing out on money. That's a lot of pressure. I get it. But I want to challenge you, up-and-comers, to learn to love and seek out joy and connection as your biggest motivator. All of these teams that you see when they're getting interviewed, you see the NBA Finals, you see the WNBA, you see college, they're always talking about each other and the joy that they have of being together. I mean, one of the teams, you couldn't even interview them without all of them being together, right? Like, that's what I'm talking about. To get out of bed determined to see how you can find connection with the people God's allowed you to be with that day. Don't miss out on learning from someone more experienced than you. The joy of helping someone else get better. Seeing them shine at what they're good at. The joy of having people around you that believe in you and you believe in them. Seek that culture out. Be a part of that culture. I'm confident you won't regret it.
Don't know about the last bit, but, you know, we'll say I just did a poor job of editing on that one. So that was Maya Moore, obviously, from her Hall of Fame induction speech. How does that sort of hit with you, Jenna, as a coach, I suppose?
Well, just to start off, it still really annoys me that she retired so early because I loved playing against her. She's one of the best players I've ever played against, and I enjoyed watching her just so much. She could do everything. So,
just on that, like you speak of her retiring so early, incredible story. Like if you haven't seen why she retired, I would strongly suggest go and do a little bit of investigation into that one. But continue.
So just that really makes me upset that she's not still playing the game that she loved so much. Obviously, there was other reasons why she retired. But I think what she's talking about is what every team wants to aspire to, is to have that culture where it's just a joy to be around. And I think looking back, I guess I always have more, I've played a lot longer than what I've coached. So I always go back to that. And I think I can look back and it's a couple of teams where you can look back with all the teams I played in, where you do have that culture that it's just such a joy to be around. And it's what, yeah, every team, you want that and you're always trying to strive for that, but it is really difficult.
Yeah, hard to find. Like, and look, let's face it, there are, it's probably easier in an individual sport or like doubles tennis or something like that where you've only got to get along with one person. Like basketball is different because, you know, there can be up to 15 people, 20 people on a roster sometimes, depending on what it looks like. But trying to find a place, and it's funny because I was only talking to a parent about this maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. Like, oh, we're thinking about moving clubs. I'm like, oh, okay, give me the reasoning behind it. And all their reasoning was, they want to play at a high, like they love their club. They really love being there. They love the coaching. They love the players around it, but they want to play at a high level. It's like, well, don't move. Like, if you've actually found somewhere that makes your child happy, play there. Like, that's, you know, they'll play where they play. Like, the grading will take care of itself, of course, but it's so hard to find. Like, you mentioned, like, how long was your playing career, Jenna? Like,
professionally, 19 years.
Like, that's a long time, as it turns out. So it is one of those things where it's like, well, go where you're happy. Like, if you can only find, like, it is fleeting. Like, I think about all the teams I've coached as well. There are probably 3 that really stick out that it's like, I really loved coaching that team. Like, that was the team that I really enjoyed. I don't care if we won or lost. Like, that, it was just where they were. Like, that's hard to find.
Playing coaching as well, like, those teams, I can't even remember, like, my favourite teams that I've coached as well and probably played in, so a little bit lower than Jenna's competition, but anyway. but I can't even really remember if we won, like, because that's not what I'm remembering, right? Like, it really goes back to basketball, sort of the vessel that gives us those amazing moments as well. And that's what she's talking about, those really cool moments where you, let's say you're going through adversity and you work through something together. They're the things that you remember.
It's how big a role do you think the coach has to play in this? And this is the bit I'm not too sure on. Like, how much of that is just player-driven and it's like right people, right time, right location, and how much of it has been the coaches put them in that position?
Oh, I think it goes hand in hand.
Yep.
I think it's really hard for a playing group to be joyful and happy if there's not that connection with the coach and their staff.
Yep.
So I think it's the entire staff and players all together finding joy in sort of those smaller moments that then, yeah, you can look back in 10, 15 years' time and you're like, oh, yeah, I loved that team. So I don't think it's possible without that buy-in from everyone.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we were talking, I can't think what we were talking about, but we're talking about some kids that had made a state team. And, you know, they were getting a little bit stroppy because, we're not allowed to have headphones on in the bus. It's like, good. Like that, like when you walk into the stadium, whatever, like no problems with that. But on the bus, like enjoy the bus ride for the bus ride. Like you don't get those back. That's the fun stuff and like the road trips and, but you can't replace that. And I remember even being like a coach and hearing what was going on in the bus behind me. And it's like, there's part of me that's like shaking my head thinking I need to pull this up. This part of me was like, no, they got it. Like they know where the line is. Like,
and you're sitting at the front of the bus smiling with what they're talking about and the vibes and the energy that they're all bringing.
It is. And those teams are so hard to find. And that's they're the ones, like, in all honesty. So, like, I know we are in a time of year at the moment where there is a lot of talk about people changing clubs and all those sorts of things. I get it. But if you are happy and you're in a spot that's a good spot, stay in that spot. Like, it's far harder to keep chasing it.
I think for juniors, for VJBL, I think it's getting harder to find those groups because we're kind of seeking something else. It's just about wins and losses, and I think we've got to get back to those sorts of moments. They're the moments that you actually play for as well. Like, you're not getting – like, these junior athletes aren't getting paid to play in this, so what are they playing for, you know?
And you've got to find out what's fun for everyone because everyone will have different goals and aspirations and motivations and all those sorts of things. But if you can find a team where it is happy, joy, uplifting for everyone and you can uplift someone else, why wouldn't you? Well, that's a gimme.
And I think looking back, I played better when it was joyful.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Did you know it at the time?
No, it's more looking back. But you look back and it's like, oh, that was a stressful year and you were tense and it wasn't fun going to trainings and all that, those types of things. And when you do really enjoy waking up and it's like, yeah, I get to go compete against some of my really good friends and this is going to be fun today, you tend to play more free, and it's just,
Do you transfer that into your coaching? Do you go, geez, that was a good year? What was the coach instilling to create those moments? Do you ever look back on it that way as well, from like a coach perspective?
No, but I think in my role as a coach now, I think I look more on it. It's these kids have a lot on their plates, and life can be really stressful, so it's, I don't want to add to that burden for them. So where I can add fun in, I do really try and do that for their sakes.
Yeah, and that is reading the room of your players too. Like, not every team is built the same, and let's face it, it is a roller coaster from week to week as to what you're going to get. One week to be honest, you can get them on a Monday night and they're super engaged and dialed in, and you're looking at the Wednesday like, yes, this is going to be the session. And they're rolling on the Wednesdays. Oh, what happened? It's been 48 hours. Why such a difference? That's what it is. This is the life of a teenager, if anyone out there has forgotten. It is. It ebbs and flows. But I think that's the important part, as you say, Jenna, like, read the room, work out, well, okay, what do I need to be here? Do I need to be the person that cracks the whip? Do I need to be the person that sits there and says, no, let's go a different way about this? And, you know, cracking the whip's actually the easy thing to do. Like, it's not hard. Like, anyone can pull people up when they've made a mistake. It's knowing when and how. That's the difficult part. So it's a challenge out there for coaches. All right, next one is John Calipari on body language.
Body language screams. It screams for everybody to see. Head down, this. And in most cases, it's an immaturity thing, but the second part of it is a little lack of toughness, mental toughness, that I'm not getting broken down because I missed a couple shots or I fumbled a ball or I missed a free throw. I don't care. I'm tough. I didn't think I had to teach them this, but I pulled out the toughness sheet and we read what toughness is. And so my point to them is how we think has to change if you want how you're playing to change.
All right, body language. Hit me, Nick.
It's a massive one. It's often a question that I used to ask my athletes when they were training. I would just pick a coach that they would know. Let's say it's Brian Gorgian, and I'll say, if Brian Gorgian walked past, what would he see right now? Because your body language tells so many stories. Like, if you slammed, you got your head down, your arms are crossed. Like, it does matter how you present yourself. Present yourself does matter. And I would go deeper than that as well. As a coach, why is there body language like that? Is it something that I'm doing? Is it that I haven't identified? Maybe they're just not enjoying their basketball. Why aren't they enjoying their basketball? So I think it's a huge telltale sign when there's trials that are coming up in the coming months. Like, you got to check your body language there as well. That goes for coaches too. like you're slanting, leaning on the bench when someone's doing a demonstration, let's say at a SDP trial or something like that. The parents see that. Like it's not a look that you want. It looks like you're disengaged. You're not really watching the players, even though you might be. So yeah, body language is super important. It's not the only thing, but it's the first thing that people see.
Well, in most cases, you're probably going to witness how someone moves, behaves before you're actually going to see them play. Like, and that's a part of it. Like, in general, what are some of the telltale signs of bad body language that you see?
Oh, the one I dislike the most, and it's from Phil Brown when I was at the AIS when he was my coach. There was no dead fishes. So it's like when you come off the bench and it's like the back of your hand, not a proper high five. That was like something that he just, like you're coming off and you're giving a proper high five. There's no dead fishes while we're at the AIS. And it's just
something
that stuck in my head since I was 15 years old with him there, that it was like really in my head. And I might come off and like really slap your hand if I'm angry, but there was never a dead fish. But yeah, the same thing Nick was talking about, like the crossing of the arms. If you're on the bench, like the slumping in your seat, like you need to be engaged. So that's like, you know, you lean forward and so you can see everything. It's the eye rolls are really a really bad one. Yep. If a coach tells you something, even if you don't necessarily agree, just do not eye roll. take it on board and go with whatever, but do not eye roll. So they're some of probably the ones that I really dislike.
It's funny. There was a workout with a player here. There was a WNBA athlete, so you can probably narrow it down fairly quickly. I just don't want to name them just in case. And we were talking about when they go and do workouts and they get feedback from coaches that are not necessarily WNBA coaches, they're just coaches that are helping them work out. And it's like, do you ever get some feedback that you don't necessarily agree with? They're like, yeah, of course.
All the time.
Yeah, my job is to just sit there and go, yeah, that one doesn't apply to me, and just shelve it and move on. And it's like, oh, that's refreshing. Like there's no disrespect or eye roll about it. It's just like, yeah, that one's not for me now. That's fine.
It's respect too. Like it's not, you know, I need to listen to you and not you sort of thing. It's that equal respect of like you have a position that's different to mine and I need to respect that. You respect that with your body language. I would even go as far as like with coaches when they coach with their hands in their pockets. That for me, even that annoys me a little bit with body language. Like I think you
sometimes
need your
hands.
Sometimes
it's 8:30 in the morning and it's damn cold, me. Well, like they have to cut them some slack.
Well, they can wear gloves, and they've got those. Have you seen those? I'm going off topic now. Have you seen those heat?
Little things that you crush in your hands.
You can put them in your toes too.
Yeah, there you go. See,
I hadn't thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
This in Queenstown, I used it. You put them in the bottom of your shoes, and it keeps your toes warm, which like keeps your body
warm.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, see, there's the solution to the problem. But I don't disagree. Like coaching with a coffee in hand, that's one that frustrates me straight away. Like if you can't get caffeinated before you have to coach that game, sorry, you are disorganized. Like that's no good to me. But I am also mindful too that there are times when I look back on my coaching and it's like, look, whilst the message out of my mouth may have been positive, the body language was not. And that's like what do kids pick up on straight away? They'll look and they'll get the visual and it's like, hey, this is not going to be good. So you've got to be careful as well. The body language is a big part of it. And look, not to say that you can't pace up and down or cross your arms or whatever it is, but just be careful. Like if you're trying to give a really positive and uplifting message, but the look on your face is nothing but anger, what do you think they're going to take? They're going to listen to nothing. They're going to go straight to, yeah, but what you're showing me is different to what you're telling me. And, you know, kids are perceptive in that space, I must admit.
And that's a roundabout way to teach that toughness. You're showing them how to deal with those emotions and those pressures and things like that as well. Yep. Like, I don't think he means toughness necessarily as like just diving on the ball all the time, but how you deal with those difficult emotions and situations is what he's more talking about as well.
And I spoke to an athlete about this last night. Like if you miss a shot and you have a head down or you tense up about it, it's not helping you for your next shot.
Yep.
So it's if you're looking back in terms of adjustments for your next shot, I'm okay with that. But if you're looking back because you're angry or annoyed that you missed it, our minds are so strong that it really impacts how you're going to be moving forward. So for athletes, I think that's something they need to think about as well.
Yeah, body language is really one of the underrated ones, I think. It is the first thing because the amount of time, even in, like here at SBC, you can walk past a court, you can't go in there and hear it necessarily, but you see which kids are engaged and which kids aren't. Like, you know, just from behind the glass, you know, and there is always someone watching. It is amazing how often it happens. There, you might be doing a workout where you think no one's around. There's always someone around. So always. Be careful. Mm-hmm. Be careful. Next one is from Ange Postecoglou.
All right, tempo intensity, boys. Hey, when the whistle goes, we go. Focus, concentration on everything we do. And the most important thing is the next action. Next action, always in the mind. We have the ball. What's the next action? What do we do next? What do I do next? If we lose the ball, next action. What do I do next? What do we do next? It's always our focus. What happens next? What's in the past is in the past. Then we look forward always. Play our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts. We play the Tottenham way. Let's go, boys.
Apologies for the music over the top to enhance the mood, maybe on that one. Next action. Like, Jenna, talk to me about this, because this is one because I think it ties in with body language in particular. This is one I see a lot of our junior kids getting hung up on at the moment, is an error that leads to 3 or 4 errors. Like, how do we address that and get them in the what's next?
It's so common that, yeah, there's a turnover and then you put your head down and you jog back and then it's a layup and then you're upset about it. You might miss the next catch and then, yeah, you're compounding errors. Yep. And it just forces you to spiral, and then it's that mindset stuff that we were just talking about in the previous one. And as he's saying, it's like next play constantly. You can't change what's happened in the past, but you can change what's happening in the future.
Yeah, learn from it. Like, just don't make the same mistake 3 times in a row. Like, learn from it or make a different mistake. Oh. That's going to happen.
I have a theory.
Oh, here we go.
If I only had a drop for the theory.
Yeah. I have no data to support it, but I truly believe that it's compounded and they're thinking about the past because of how much social media records what they're doing. And they know that they're getting recorded. It's getting highlighted on social media reels and things like that, like kids getting dunked on. So kids rotate less because they nearly got dunked on before. They're not going to do it on the next one. And I think that compounds it as well. And I think that's why it's gotten progressively worse over the last 10 years. Because I say 10 years ago, there were so many kids that were just like, yeah, I'll get on the line. I'll go wall up. I don't care if I get dunked on. Whereas now it's like, well, I don't want to be for the next month ridiculed for being dunked on. So they're overthinking a lot of their decisions on the court as a result of it. And now they could almost be thinking, I've turned over the ball. Is that going up onto something? And other stuff's happening. So they're struggling to get back into the present because we record so many things nowadays and post it.
Yeah, we do. And I mean, that's a separate issue again. And I think I may even have a clip on that a little bit later. But it's trying to get that what's next mentality into the kids. And I mean, really, you're in 1 of 4 spots in basketball. You're either on offense, transitioning to offense, defense, or transitioning to defense. You're in 1 of 4 actions the entire time. So if you're transitioning from defense, you probably don't have time to really think about what's just gone wrong. All you have time to think about is, how do I solve the problem? And getting back on defense is part of the problem. Do I have to impact the ball? Do I have to get to safety? Am I on pickup? Whatever the case might look like. But it really is that what's next. And I sort of try and explain to it as kids, there's no dimmer switches, like lights on or lights off. Are you on offense or are you on defense? And it's 1 of the 2. And if you don't have the ball and you have to be on defense, what's your job next? Because don't worry about what's just happened. You can learn from the mistake. That's fine. Like, you're cool making the mistake, learn from it. But you don't have time to dwell on it and just think about it and think about it and think about it. And we have a part to play with that as coaches as well. And we think about, how many times do we come to a timeout and we talk about what's just gone wrong? It's like, look, highlight something that it's like, hey, that's probably not the pass we want to be making here. Let's look for something different in that. No worries. But then talk about the positives and the good stuff that comes next, rather than just, I'm going to call a timeout to yell at my players for 45 seconds. That doesn't make anyone happy. It'll potentially make you feel good as the coach, but I'd question why that would be making you feel good. But be in the positive more than you worry about the negative. Because I think that what's next and next action is all about, okay, positive. Like, where are we at now? What could it potentially be down the road somewhere?
I think the more positive, the better. I mean, brains can't perceive or analyze can'ts, don'ts, or won'ts, right? So if you say, you know, don't get back on defense, they're only hearing that second part of the sentence. Like, if I said to you right now, don't think of a blue elephant, you're only thinking of the blue elephant, right? Like, so it's...
I'll admit you got me there. Yes, yeah. I did.
Right. Like, you can't undo
a green alligator and I couldn't.
You can't, right? So, like, it's... the more positive you are, hey, do more of this, is far more impactful and will probably get them more into the present as well.
Yep, like it.
Just quickly, Mel Downer speaks about this. We talk a lot about decision-making with the ball a lot, but there's decision-making in every aspect of basketball. Like, whether you're going to go help, if you're in denial, all that, like, you're constantly having to think about decisions on the court. So if you're worried about something that's happened in the past, it's going to be really hard to make the correct decision in the moment if you're worried about the past a lot.
Like, it takes up bandwidth we don't have, frankly.
Yeah. Just to piggyback off that, I did speak to a S&C coach a while ago. He was telling me, he broke down some of the minutes where he said, let's say that the average player plays 20 minutes. If a player holds the ball for about 3 to 4 seconds, it's probably 3 minutes out of that 20 that you've got the ball. What are you doing with the rest of the time? If you're waiting for the ball, what are you doing? Like, that's, it's a good way to kind of break it down as well.
I like it. This next one is from a youth soccer coach. I don't have a name on this one. You're just going to have to refer to them as youth soccer coach from here on in.
Even if you, sometimes we don't believe we're the best player, sometimes we look at other players and we look how good they are and we forget how good we are. Okay, but tonight, what I need you to do is get that positive mindset into saying to yourself, even if you don't believe it, just pretend for a minute and just say that you are the best player here. And then what you'll do, you'll start carrying yourself like that, because sometimes if we think other players are the best players and other players are better than us, then what that does is we don't take them on, or we get scared of them, or we don't win the tackle. Okay, you are 100% everything you need to be. Okay, so what I want to see is carry yourself now as the best player here. Okay, tell yourself, who's the best player here, Connor?
Connor Martin Kerrins.
Other than the laugh at the end, cracking message. Like, just straight off the bat, like that, and look for context, that is like an under, I'll say, 8 or 9s player that he's talking to at the moment. That, for mine, is brilliant coaching. Like, just brilliant coaching. Put them in a mindset where they can do good things.
How many times have you coached and you've either been on either side of this where they've walked on the court and at the end of the game you go, oh, we've lost that before they even threw the ball up in the air? Like, it's so powerful, the mind, if you think, oh, that's the undefeated team and, you know, they're so much better than us. Like, you know, that you can see it's ticking over in their heads. Like, it's such a powerful message of, like, just that positiveness and reassurance of yourself as well. Like, I think it's so important. Like, you can win and lose games just based off that.
Yep. Did you ever have that level of self-doubt, Jenna, I suppose, as a player, where maybe I'm not the best player on this court or this team? Or
constantly.
Yeah. How did you battle it?
It's something that I'm fully aware of now that I'm in coaching, especially with girls, and I know I'm putting a blanket over this, but I feel like we as women and girls are almost too self-aware to a detriment to ourselves. I think we constantly think we're below where we are at. So that's something in my coaching where I'm constantly trying to instill confidence in these brilliant young girls who I'm coaching who don't believe it in themselves yet. And I know that I struggled with that right through my career. And I think looking back on my playing career, I was pretty good. But during it, I was constantly doubting myself. And I think in a way it's a good thing because you work really hard because you want to constantly get better. But I also think that it limited myself as well, and I don't want the girls that I'm coaching to be limited in any way. So it's constantly trying to instill confidence in them that they are really good basketball players, because a lot of them don't recognize that in themselves, and because of that they hold themselves back, and it might be like they're not getting up and playing full court defense because they think they're going to get beat. And it's like, you are so athletic. You can stay in front of anyone or you can get past anyone. But yeah, there's this self-doubt in a lot of women, I find.
Yep. I think you're right. And you hit on a really interesting one there with, like, yeah, it can be good in a way because it keeps them working and it keeps them humble and those sorts of things. Whereas to flip it on the boys' side, not a huge amount of humility with teenage boys, as it turns out.
Or self-awareness.
Or self-awareness. Like, they're very quick to let you know when they're good. It is just a very different landscape. But you think about it too, and for the coaches that ask their players, like, after a game or after a training session, okay, what do we all think? And it's a really open-ended question. I'll bet everything I've got that the first comment will be something negative and something, oh, we didn't do this. It's like, hey, but talk about the things we did do well and really recognise those. And it's, I suppose it's easy in a lot of ways with, if someone goes and has 30 points, everyone's going to sit there and go, oh, that player played really well. But who's acknowledging the player that caught the roller on the tag every time defensively? Like, no one talks about that. Like, it's just not something that people stat care about, those types of things. So even something that you may sort of sit there and feel, oh, you know, that's a bit trivial, they won't care about this, I can promise you they will. Like, they'll hold on to that thing.
Yeah, well, even so, for SCC, I had however many coaches I had, and after each game, I got them to send me two things their team did well and one thing that needed improvement. Because I find even we as coaches, it's like, we need to do this better, we need to do this better, we need to do this better. And it's like, hold up, there's some things that we are doing really well here, and we need to recognize that as well.
Completely agree. And it is. It's, I think it's an important thing to weight the positivity. Because, you know, they're always the harder ones to find, and you have to think a little bit more about that. It's like, anyone can throw out, oh, defensive transition wasn't good. Oh, no kidding. Like, you and everyone else's, like, it's fine. But find the positives. And if that was actually, you know, we finally got our bench talking, great. Like, we'll take that. That's not a problem at all. Like, communication is one of the hardest things to get right for our junior athletes. So I think that's an important way to weight it.
I don't know if you can quickly Google this, but there's a scientific thing about it where we had a child safety officer that came in and spoke to us, and he said, tell us about players these days. What's one word to describe them? And there was like 40 negative words, like undisciplined, you know. And there was like one person who's like, he puts his hand up and he goes, ah, am I allowed to say something positive? Because it was so much on what they needed to work on that he wasn't sure if he could even engage in it. And he said it was actually a psychological thing that we do. We go straight to the negative, especially with juniors and stuff like that as well. Like, it's just really interesting that we go there first. So you just got to – you can't block all that stuff out, but just be aware of it. Like, what are you saying? It can impact them in the future.
Without a doubt.
And I think it's the whole mindset 101, that once you start looking – for good things, you'll see more of them. So I think it's important as coaches that we recognise that about ourselves as well.
Oh, there's a great clip on that coming later, Jenny. You've teed that up beautifully for me. Oh. Fantastic. Not quite yet. We've got Tim Harkness to start off with, who's talking about pressure.
To me, the one key pressure concept is this. When you're under pressure, you don't have to be better than your best. You just have to be at your best more often. That is the central secret of performing under pressure. Nothing else really matters. You know, I was explaining this to a new manager a little while ago, and I said to him, imagine that you are taking a penalty in a World Cup final, in a shootout. Do you want to take the best penalty of your life, or do you want to take an average penalty? Because the average penalty goes in. Take the average penalty, because normally the shots go in. If you try and take the best penalty of your life, that's when you miss. And, you know, in sports, so often you'll hear athletes talk about 110%. 110% is when things go wrong. When you are under pressure, you don't have to be better than your best.
I'll do something about the background music on these. I do apologise to everyone listening along. The thing that I'd probably take out of that one is just the need for consistency. And you think back to that and it's like, yeah, we all... you know, look at the Kyrie Irving jumper that he made at the end of that final series in like a game seven, stuck a massive three. But nobody talks about all the stuff that he did before then to be in that position. And we all, like, we look at, you know, games that get tight down the line, and you look at shot selection in particular, and everyone's trying to take like the back-breaking three that will like crack the game open and those sorts of things. And it's like, they're not the ones that necessarily win you the game. It's the getting back on D and being consistent, making the extra pass on offense. Good shot selection. They're the ones that actually move the needle in the right direction. And I think, like, because I put that down shot selection straight away when I was listening to it, is that you don't need to do anything outside your skill set. Like, be good at what you're good at, and the rest will kind of flow, I suppose, from that end. And that's kind of my take on it. I'm curious, do you have a different one on it, Jenna or Nick? Or?
Well, my take on it was that that's why we have to practice at game speed.
Yep.
Because then it's not any different in the game, because we've practiced this hundreds of times. So what he's sort of talking about is it's average, but that's what we've practiced. So I think that's why coaches harp on practicing at game speed all the time, so that when you get into the game, it's just natural instinct. It's what you know, it's what you do, and nothing does have to change.
Yep.
It's when you're trying to overexert from what you're used to when things start going wrong. You might turn it over or a bad shot selection because you're all like hyped and amped up. But if you practice at game speed, then when you get to the games, then everything's just going to flow naturally and it'll come really quite easily to you.
Yeah, like it.
Yeah, I agree. Practice makes permanent. And I always felt in those games when I was coaching, when I'm calling timeouts and I'm having to draw up new offenses or try some sort of specialty play, I knew I was in trouble, even though we needed something extraordinary now to help us get through this. I would rather us be able to do what we do every single week instead. And I think that's what he's saying. I mean, he says it in such a unique way. It made me go, oh, you know, because you're not used to that terminology, yeah. Right? Like it's like, hey, just be average.
Yep.
Is such a term that is I don't think it's said enough to kids either, right? Like that are playing, like,
well, just the need you've for consistency.
Yeah, big time.
It's just be good at what you're good at. Like I was watching Eurobasket's on at the moment. I love European basketball, and I was watching Finland beat Serbia the other day. And it was interesting as it got down the stretch. I'm just watching Finland just go through the motions. Like they were up, they held onto a lead. They weren't concerned of, hey, we need to go and stick a three or we need something all world. They were just like, no, we just go run our offense and we defend. Like, it's like, oh, yeah, that's so simple. But that's, you know, that got them a win against a very, very good team in Serbia. And if you're not watching Eurobasket, I strongly recommend go and have a watch of that thing. It's on Disney Plus, I want to say, and probably on ESPN somewhere. But great basketball going on. But It was really impressive. Like Finland, who is a much smaller nation by comparison, they're not, you know, the same level of Serbia usually on the world stage, just found a way to just grind it out. And it's like, yeah, there's something to be said for that overall. All right, and next one is Jerome Tang on recruiting.
Like I watch timeouts. I watch how kids sub in and out of games. I watch how they cheer for their teammates when they're not in the game. I watch how they interact with referees. You know, I watch how they, if I go to a high school gym, and obviously we hadn't been able to do that for a while, but when I would go to practices, I'd watch how they talk to the people who keep the stats or who run the clock. You know, you really want, like, there's a lot of talent out there. But talent doesn't trump character, okay? Character is what allows talent to thrive.
So tying back into the body language one from earlier, obviously.
It's a big one. I'm about to quote Mel Downer as well because one of her presentations, she put it brilliantly, where you can pass on good players, you can't pass on good people. And I think that's so true. Like I just think, you know, good people who – and I know we have a responsibility to help them be good people as well, but, you know, those kids that – are jumping up and down because a kid who's been working on his jump shot hits a jump shot and he couldn't be happier for his teammate. They're invaluable. They're so important. They're so important that in the NBA, they sign these guys who do those things to like 5-6 year deals just to keep them. Was it Udonis Haslem? Like he's one of the guys that everyone just loves. So they just kept signing him again and again. I haven't seen him play a minute in like 8 years, something like that. Like, yeah, it's super important.
One of the most decorated goalkeepers in Manchester City history is a guy called Scott Carson and has played like 3 games for Manchester City, but the similar deal, they kept signing him for the locker room stuff. Goalkeeper that never bitched, never complained, was happy for everyone, great locker room, when called upon could obviously do it, trained the right way, did all those sorts of things, but barely played and was revered like for years. Like he got probably an extra 3 to 4 years out of a career, which on Premier League money is significant. Just by being the right person at the right time. And it's funny that you think about all the kids we coach and they're all very respectful and polite and all that sort of stuff. I must admit, the kids we are fortunate enough to work with are great in that space. And it really almost hits the wrong when a word comes back with, hey, I saw this kid and they didn't act the right way. And it's amazing, like we talked about it before, there's always someone watching. There is always someone watching. We used to joke about it with our state team kids. That if you screw up on a Friday night and you go and get a tech, my phone will ring before the end of your game that someone has been watching that and seen it happen. So the ability to treat people the right way and do things the right way is just so valuable in that space. And it's probably not really spoken about enough because we spend all our time trying to make them better basketball players. How much time can we really spend on the other things? It's like, well, you don't have to carve out time in your session plan, but it is making sure you get everyone with a non-dead fish 5 on the way through. Like, those sorts of things matter because people remember it. Like, you remember that from 15 years old, Gemma?
Absolutely, I do.
And now?
And if people, everyone, like, throughout my career, if they dead fished me, I'm like, oh.
But that's what it is. And I think we all have a responsibility, just, you know, the please, the thank you, the hey, good job. Like, those sorts of things can just be infectious, I think, throughout the group. But remember, if you want to go somewhere, how you treat people will be noticed.
This also goes back to Maya Moore's comments as well. I think that helps bring the joy in the culture as well if you've got good people around. And obviously in juniors it's a little bit harder, but especially when you get to seniors, like, people are looking on how we can build out this team to create that joy and create that culture that is enjoyable to be around. And so if they're going to watch you and you're not cheering for your teammate or you're slumping or giving dead fishes, like, it's not someone that is going to be signed to a contract for a team. And I think once you get painted with that at a young age, it's hard to get rid of it. So I would be really conscious as a young athlete on behaving in a respectful manner as early as you can, because it can be detrimental to you moving forward.
Yeah, Another great example is like DeMarcus Cousins. Unbelievable player, up and down a little bit with injury as well, but had some personality issues on and off the court and things like that, and that really impacted his ability to stay in the NBA as a result of it. You know, Dante Exum is another good example of the other end, where it hurt himself, got himself right, like, just such a good dude and plays so hard that he comes back in and they're like, oh, yes, absolutely, come on board.
Yep. You know? Absolutely. No, culture pieces are a massive part in that space. And that's why a lot of Australians are recruited so heavily, because they've had that reputation over the years of being the good locker room people that do things the right way and a good culture fits for programs. And next one, Novak Djokovic on mental strength.
Mental strength, which is what I think is your great gift.
I would have to correct you. It's not a gift. It's something that comes with work. There are different techniques. Conscious breathing is a big part, especially in the moments when you're under tension. I might appear maybe locked in, but trust me, there's a storm inside. I don't like this kind of a mindset that I see a lot in sports. Like, just think positive thoughts, be optimistic. There is no room for failure. There is no room for doubts and stuff like this. It's impossible to do that. You are a human being. The difference, I guess, between the guys who are biggest champions and the ones that are struggling to get to the highest level is the ability to not stay in those emotions for too long. So for me, it's really relatively short. So as soon as I experience it, I acknowledge it, I maybe burst, I scream on the court, whatever happens, but then I'm able to bounce back and reset.
Interesting take, because we're not talking all positive, and the bad thoughts do get in occasionally of, I've just, like in his case, I've just double faulted twice going to this side of the court. How am I going to get back into this game? I'm up against it, you know, set point, match point, break, whatever it might look like. He's not saying you can only be positive. I think it's important to acknowledge there are going to be cracks, but the ability to move on is the hard part. Like, how can we teach that, Jenna?
Well, he recognizes that he has a technique for that.
Yeah.
So he's screaming out loud and then he moves on. So yes, the thought is there. He screams, he lets it out, but then he's moving on to the next play, which was one of the points earlier. So I think that it is techniques. And I spoke to an athlete last night. You might have like a hair tie on your wrist that you just flick.
Yep.
And it's like, I'm moving on now. Yep. So there's lots of different techniques that you can use, because as he says, the thoughts are going to be there, but you can't let them consume you.
Yeah, and it's a great point. Like, I really like the hair tie thing, because it's something that's very controllable in that sort of space. Like, you can be walking down the court and flick it and you snap yourself out of it, and all of a sudden it's like, next play. Like, that's a really easy one. But I think the key is recognizing it too. A lot of younger players probably don't recognize it and end up in that funk for a while in that space.
I think they just think so emotionally, right? Like, they believe this is when the emotions get out of control. I think this is more of a life thing, right? Like, it's more than just basketball, but if you try and control and push down certain emotions and be positive all the time, it's gonna brew. It's going to come up eventually. So, like, understanding that it's a part of you, and sometimes you get upset. I found that I coach better when I'm not sitting still. I'm not a standing still coach. Now, it doesn't mean I can just run around and be disrespectful and start screaming at referees and players and things like that, but you've got to figure out ways to, like he was saying, to get it out, like it because it's part of it. It's going to flow through you, so you've got to learn to deal with that. And then when that happens, I think you can then decide which one works for you and which one doesn't. Does that angry emotion help me right now? No, it doesn't. Okay, I'm still angry, but it's just it's not something that I'm going to use at the moment.
Yeah, and it probably depends on your situation a little bit too. Like you sort of think of Seinfeld, like the old Serenity Now type stuff. At some point, it's going to bubble up and it's going to be a problem. Yeah, exactly. Or Rage a Hole from the Simpsons era. But it is one of those things where you need to be able to get it out in some capacity. And you may have two different techniques. Like you might have something for when you're playing and then something for after the game's done. Like, but have a process through that and just work out what that looks like. Like I was like self-talk was a big one for me when I was playing like cricket. Like that was a big thing because you were usually fairly isolated in that space. If you were batting or bowling, you were kind of doing that by yourself, fielding obviously around a few people. But I had a lot of self-talk stuff. And for me, it was just like eventually you get to a point where like I would just usually sit there and go, you're being an idiot, just move on. Like, and that was kind of the snap for me to sit there and go, hey, you're overthinking a lot of stuff here that you don't need to be overthinking. Just go and deal with whatever comes next and deal with that one on its merits sort of thing. So it is different for everyone, but it is something that that a lot of people will have to deal with at some point, is that mental strength side of things when you're playing sport in particular. Next one is Jürgen Klinsmann.
Any advice to parent coaches? Because they've got their kid playing the team.
The biggest advice is step back. Let the kids play and let the coach do his little thing of guidance. Mm. That he's a guide. And the more you try to influence that now, the more you damage actually your own kid. You know, I was very fortunate. My dad always came to the games, never said a word. So that helped me dramatically. You know, so I can only hope that, you know, that wherever you have a little bit of an influence, telling them the people just step back, parents, that just let the coach do, especially let the kid do it.
Really interesting sort of space, obviously. We're in a unique position, I suppose, as basketball, where people can sit right on the side of the court and you can hear them, obviously. It's difficult not to cheer and support on a sideline, but it's probably crossing the line more often than not that I've seen. Like, it's very rare that I can go to a junior game now and not think that parent's a little out of control in that space. How can we help the parents, I suppose, first off?
I guess it just comes down to coach education for parents. It's a difficult space because there's probably moments where parents live vicariously through their kids as well, so it's very hard for them to let go.
Going with probably.
Well, yeah, but yeah.
Bit of a tangent.
You know what I mean? Yeah, we can go sidetracked here, but like we won't, but that's usually the case. And if any parents are listening, like if you're the parent that's yelling out, shoot it, pass it, like you're denying them the skill advancement or developing a skill to make a decision on the court. Like that's really important. I'm sure Jenna has her issues sometimes with her players that are, you know, you want them to make a decision between A, B, and C, and they just take the last answer, right? And like we can do this together. Like coaches and parents can work together to help create a better environment for that, and therefore better players as well. But yeah, it is very common. Like I used to have a job, obviously, at Casey, and when I would walk around on Friday nights, and this wasn't just Casey coach parents, it was parents from other associates just yelling at the kids, and when they don't hear them, like some parents actually walking to the baseline so they can hear them closer. Like it's a little bit out of control. I think we've got to understand it's their moment, it's theirs.
And the worst for me is I've been at games where I can hear what the coach is saying, and it's like, okay, little Harry, go be on split line. And then you hear a parent being like, you've got number 45. And it's like, you're literally going against what the coach is saying. And that is so confusing to your child because they're really conflicted on am I listening to my coach and standing on split line, or am I going to go deny number 45 out on the opposite baseline corner? So I think that's where I get really frustrated. Like, absolutely support and encourage your child as much as your heart desires. Yep. But the coaching from the sidelines, it's confusing your kid and making it harder for them, in my opinion.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And which voice does your child naturally go towards? Yours. So they're now tuning out a whole bunch of other stuff that's going on the court. We're not playing 2K. Like, we're not controlling them via a video game controller on the site. You've got to let them figure it out for themselves. And again, you bang on. Support, encourage, no problems. But just keep it very neutral. It doesn't have to be specific to what you want them to do, because what you want them to do doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. This is more about making sure that the kids are in a position to do what they're supposed to be doing. And in some cases, like I was talking to a mate of mine who is in this, like he identified straight away, he's like, I am one of those parents that gives far too many instructions. I'm like, mate, you never played basketball in your life. He's like, yeah, I know, but I'll watch it on TV. I'm like, even worse. Like, you should definitely not be saying anything from the sidelines. He's like, yeah, I got it. Like, he's like, so now I just sit there and I listen to a podcast. He's like, I sit there and I watch the kid go up and down and I cheer and all that sort of stuff, but I stay in the podcast so that I don't feel like I have to go and say something. I'm like, well, a bit of self-reflection. Like, you've managed to find a way in the end. But yeah, those kinds of things. Just be mindful. And it's, of course, it's always the parent that sits there and says, I'm not that parent that usually is. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like we all know what it looks like and what it sounds like and those sorts of things. So you do have to be a little bit careful on that one. Next one is Ange Postecoglou again, but he's talking about something specific on this one. So this was after a game. There was a couple of young kids that asked a fairly provocative question for him and had the phone up, trying to film for a reaction more than anything else. So this is the social media stuff we were coming back to from earlier.
If somebody says to you, right, Tom, that was a good article last night, but I don't like that point you made, you go, okay, mate, and you might just walk off. If somebody says, hey, Tom, I didn't like that article, what do you think they're trying to achieve? No, hold on a second. No, no. Reciprocal question. Let me answer it. What I think they're trying to achieve, they're not really interested in an answer to a question. They just want a reaction. They want their 5 minutes of fame because that's what this gives them. And that's what I was talking about, right? For young people, this is more dangerous than any other weapon in the world as far as I'm concerned. And so if I don't pull up, especially young kids, who put up a phone to my face, then what's stopping them doing that in the schoolyard? What's stopping them doing that in general life and bullying people? Because it's a bullying. I think it was a couple, it might have been a Fulham game you're talking about where that happened. There was two young boys that were doing it. And I asked them, I don't know if it's shown in the clip, but I asked them, where's your dad? I wanted to talk to their dad. Or where's your mum? And they got slightly sheepish and embarrassed because it's not criticism I'm reacting to. It's them holding up a phone. Why are you holding up a phone? What are you trying to do? So you can put it on social media and say, look, I've got Ange Postecoglou to react.
Interesting space we're obviously in at the moment with the world of social media. And I mean, this is, to be completely frank, we've never gone through what we're going through now with social media previously. Like, it's such a new sort of trend, I guess, for lack of a better term. We're kind of learning on the fly. But how do you see, Jenna, I'm curious for you on this one, how do you see the impact of social media in particular on today's group of basketballers as they're coming through?
Well, I think it even goes back to the point we were just making. Like, all the highlights are on made shots and exciting things. So parents also just want to encourage that stuff rather than, oh, that person played really good defense or made a really nice pass. Like, that's not going to get on social media. But it's a really scary world. And I think kids are more interested in making a highlight real than playing basketball in the right way, which is really concerning to me.
Yep.
And I don't know where this leads us in terms of like basketball style of play, because it's about making this insane shot. How many shots has it taken you to get on this highlight reel, for one? And then the showboating of celebrating said shot for it to make that real. It's a wild time that we as coaches need to do our best to, lack for a better word, reel in as best we can.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Now, the first time I noticed it is I had a year off from coaching, and then I came back. This was about two-ish years ago. And one of the kids we're playing against, he hit a three and he did this massive song and dance down the sideline. And then I turned to my players, I go, what's going on? Why is he doing that? He's down 30. And they go, oh yeah, media guys are here. And then points to the baseline, and there they are, you know, videoing down on the baseline. So it's built this, you know, we need you to do something really extravagant so we can get some social media clout. So the way to negate that is, you know, the best thing we can do is keep their what matters most and what's most important, make it really clear for them that it's more than just a social media. And this and almost prove to them, because sometimes I've also proved to them who was on social or certain social media accounts a few months ago, I would ask them and quiz them who was on there, you know, in February and things like that. And when they couldn't name them, I'd say, see, they come and go very quickly, but what's consistent is your habits and your manners and how you behave, and that's going to just instill in you. And that's the best way I try and sell it.
And it's yeah, difficult.
There's no answer to it, unfortunately. Like you said, Rob, like I don't know where we're going to land yet. Like it's kind of still up in the air about, you know, these sorts of things. But yeah.
Yeah, and the dopamine hit that comes with obviously being recognised on social media and all that sort of stuff, I understand it completely. Like I try and stay away from my phone as often as possible, in all honesty. Like it's just not something I want to have around me to that point. I feel like the people that need to get me can get me. Like, but the others, I'm pretty content not to live in that world of social media. And like, I think I turned my phone off the other weekend and just off, and I didn't want to talk to anyone, see from anyone, hear from anyone, none of it. It was actually really refreshing, like to just sort of, oh, I'm just doing what I'm doing. I'm not bound by someone's chasing me for something, those sorts of things. But it is, it's scary where it can get to. Like I was reading something not too long ago about the best thing that you can do for your child. And when I say child, like young child, is keep them away from phones as long as you possibly can. And because it becomes a distraction. You want your kids to be bored. Like you want them to try and find ways to be creative and think. And it's like, well, I don't just, you know, pull up the phone and play Angry Birds for like 45 minutes. It's like, and you think about it, like who was the last kid that built a fort at home or something like that and like rearranged all the couches in the room and all that? Like that doesn't happen anymore because they're just in front of a screen continually. So trying to wean them off that, I suppose, is probably the best way to reduce the social media clout. And I do worry a little bit, and this is so hypocritical of me, given I'm not a parent. Like, it becomes babysitting. Like, the phone is just like, hey, I need 10 minutes apiece, grab the phone, you go over there and do that. And to be fair, I don't live in that world, but just don't give them the phone. Like, don't give them that opportunity. Let them be bored. Like, that's okay. But try and shift the narrative back towards what are you actually supposed to be doing, rather than or the over-celebrating, because the over-celebrating is the one that gets me. And it's like to the point now where we've even got people filming people celebrating and that's the clip. And it's like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, this is the world we live in.
I've seen that as well. Like, yeah. I don't even know what shot they took. It was just the celebration.
Wild.
Like, do we get to like the NFL, right? Like, we just get tech foul if you do it from now on.
Well, we saw what happened. Basketball got formed out of that, and that's not a bad thing, maybe. It's you know, one of the more enjoyable movies. The next one is from Sade Zahari, talking about sort of competencies more than anything else.
The better you get at something, the more invisible your expertise becomes to others and yourself, because suddenly it's really easy for you. And often we come to equate effort with value. Researchers David Dunning and Justin Kruger conducted a series of experiments, and they found that people with very little knowledge overestimate their ability because they don't yet know what they don't know. They don't know how much there is to know, so of course they feel satisfied. Of course they feel like they know what they need to know. Conversely, the more someone knows about something, the more they undervalue or underestimate their ability in that space. The reason why this happens is because your skills have become muscle memory. You don't even realize the years of experience that you have developed and the expertise that you've honed. You're just looking at you here and now, and it's so easy to overlook everything else.
I think this comes back to what you were talking about before, Jenna, like find the positives. Like speak more to the positives than you are the negatives in that space, because there'll be plenty of things that we do as coaches that we don't even realize we do well. And it's just like, oh, but I just do that. And then you talk to someone and they go, no, but I don't do that. Like, how did that, like, why did you do that? How do you do that? And that's part of it. But also our players will go through that. Like, there's so many players that are the great role player in a team, as an example, that don't get on the highlight reels, that don't get the over-celebratory type stuff going on, that just do their job and it gets just kind of washed over. And I think acknowledging the role player for what it's supposed to be is a big part of what we have to do as coaches. Like, how, I'm curious that on this one, Jenna, I know you're big on decision-making and IQ with players in particular. How do you go about identifying that and then celebrating it when you see something? Or is it just one of those ones that's come naturally now?
I try and celebrate as a coach as much as I can.
Yep.
As I spoke about earlier, I think it's very easy as us coaches to, you're not doing this right, you're not doing this right, you're not doing this right. So any full court bounce pass that I see, I'm going to be...
Oh, I'm just shivers down my spine.
Celebrating. Oh,
Jenna
that.
Was waiting to roll yeah, that one out.
It's the thing that comes up most with me. Yeah, they see something, they're like, oh, Jenna, you'll like that. I'm like, yeah, I did actually. but I just think the more we can celebrate players, the better for me, because there'll always be things that they can work on. And I think as a player, until the day I retired, I was trying to improve things.
Yep.
So if you're a 15, 16-year-old young athlete, there's just so much that you can work on. So I think we need to celebrate what they are good at, because there is always going to be those things that they can continually improve as well.
Yeah, like it.
How many times do you do coach to player feedback and you say something like, oh, how do you think you're going with your closeouts? Oh, terrible. Huh. Well, from what I can see, you're actually pretty good at it, by the way. Like, well, they don't even recognize...
think where you started to where you are now.
Yeah, and they don't recognize that difference either. I think that's really important. You know, practice makes permanent, and you get to that point where it's almost like autopilot for them with some of these things that they're doing that you don't recognize it. But like, to Jenna's point, celebrating it and making sure you acknowledge it as well is the way that you make sure that thing stays permanent, right? Like if a coach goes, hey, I saw that box out, nice job. That goes a long way.
Yep. And you think about all the interviews you hear over the years with, you know, who is your best teammate? They very rarely say like the Kobe Bryant types. Like they always go with someone that's got, really? That's your favorite teammate? They're like, yeah, they did everything right. Like they always threw the extra pass. They always had the box out. They always communicated. Like those are the ones where the players recognize it. I think we as coaches probably have to dig into that a little bit more. And it's like, well, who actually makes this team tick? And we've all had players over the years where I think we just sort of sit there and we don't really appreciate how good they are, but you really notice them when they're not on the court.
Like that glue piece that brings everything together.
It really is. And those players are elite, but they're hard to find.
I had a kid one year with 16 ones. They were very good team. Actually, I think it was when that COVID year when we went lockdown. But anyway, but we were trying to figure out why the team played so much better when he was on the court. We're like, there's got to be a data point here. There's got to be something. And it took us ages to find it. And it turned out that he boxed out more players to get other people rebounds.
Yep.
That was the defining factor for him. Like that's the type of, when you're trying to put a data to the character, that's what they are. They just go, I don't need the stat. I just want that guy to get the rebound so I can get the win.
Yep. When was the last time you praised someone on a box out though? Like we never do it because it's almost just that one of those things that, oh, we expect you to do it.
Mm.
But how many times we sit there and go, nobody boxes out. It's like, well, okay. So when we see it actually happen, why don't we validate it and praise it in that space? So that's all right. We'll get there. Another youth soccer coach, we'll call this one Youth Soccer Coach 2, talking about emotions on the pitch.
We're going to play a quick game, ready? I want you to give your biggest smile. I want you to give an angry face. I want you to give a sad face. Do you know what you've just done then? You've controlled your emotions. So you're in control of all of your emotions. What I want you to try and do is when you're on the pitch, control your emotions. And I want you to try and be as happy as possible when you play. So even if your teammate makes a mistake or you make a mistake, rather than being angry or sad, I want you to try and be happy. Do you reckon you can do that? Show us a big smile. Bigger, even bigger, even bigger. High five. What a superstar.
So love the positivity in it straight away. And look, it's... Well, in soccer pitches, you've got 11 players. So trying to get to every player beforehand is going to be complicated for sure. But just the ability to recognize that, hey, it's not all going to be good, but your job as a player is to just be happy. Be happy for yourself, be happy for other people, a mistake, okay, that's fine. It's an opportunity to go and do something better in that space. Like happiness is such an important part of what we do, and it speaks back to the Maya Moore clip of finding joy and finding people that can uplift. Like our job is to keep our players happy, and there are so many players that actually don't care as much about the scoreboard as we think they do. Like they'll sit there and it's like, oh, we lost. Okay, that's unfortunate. And they'll just move on. But they will know when they're happy or not happy. And that's probably the defining emotion, I think, that we have to kind of control a little bit more. And I mean, it speaks to the body language. It speaks to just the mental strength side of things. How do we get players to be happy all the time on a court? Like is role clarity the answer, Nick?
Clarity, for young kids, it's more about giving them more of what they want whilst creating the boundaries. So I think it's more so like more gameplay, so they feel like they're playing and competing against something, and then they understand what a win and a loss looks like, and that it's not that big of a deal, I suppose, in that way. That's what I would focus more on in terms of managing their emotions, because if they're struggling with it when the game happens, it's probably too late that they're dealing with it then. It should really be dealt with during practice and things like that anyway. Role clarity at a very young age is difficult, isn't it? Like it's, you know, 8, 9 years old. How do you give them role clarity, I guess?
Yep.
So,
is that a message you'd want players hearing before a game, Jenna? Or is that like too much? Or is that like too not specific enough to like a game?
Oh, it's really interesting because I feel like you get into sport because you want to have fun, you want to enjoy it, and it makes you happy.
Yep.
And I don't know when that switch happens that it turns not as fun and happy. And so I think if we can try and prolong that as coaches, I do think it's important. Because I think I mentioned it earlier. I think if you're enjoying yourself, I do think you're going to play better.
Yep.
And if I think you're playing better, you're going to be like, it's like a... Yeah,
you want to come back.
Yeah. So I do think I think that's going a pretty far way with how he is doing it. But I do think that we as coaches can help instill happiness and joy in our athletes. It might not be they're all running around with massive, big, cheesy grin smiles on their faces constantly.
Well,
but I think it can be an internal, like, yeah, we are enjoying ourselves and that's why we're coming back week on week.
And especially those young ages, we're really teaching them how to interpret what the world is throwing at us, right? How we interpret the world ourselves. So how to manage those emotions, what, like, should I be angry at this? Why are you angry at this? You know, help them analyze that part of it. Rather than, I'm not sure I would just say, hey, you got to be positive all the time. Like, it's not one I can really relate to because I just don't think the world works that way.
You're not positive all the time.
I'm not. Well, yeah, that's a surprise to Rob, isn't it? Like, he's like, really?
Yeah, man, hadn't picked up on that at all. Hey, the next one, we're down to our last couple here, is Vanessa Van Edwards. Would strongly recommend if you can have a watch of her TED Talk with Stephen Bartlett on Diary of a CEO. Is a really good watch. All about sort of body language and persona that you put out there.
I found this study that looked at the cool kids in high school, some kids more popular than others. And the hypothesis was maybe they're more athletic, maybe they're smarter, maybe they're more attractive, maybe they're more extroverted, maybe they're funnier, right? Those are all the things I would think of, right? There were popular kids who were those things. The only commonality across all the grades and all the schools was that the most liked kids had the longest list of people that they liked. This was like relief for me because it meant I don't have to show up as impressive or funny or extroverted or be good at sports because I'm not. All I have to do is aggressively like people. So if you want to be attractive, if you want to create bonds, friend-wise, romantic-wise, what I want you to be doing is you're asking these questions, looking for me too's, and then you're thinking, how can I like this person more?
Interesting study on that one. And I mean, she talks a lot about body language in particular, and the one with Stephen Bartlett, I would recommend watch the video of it. Like, it's not a bad podcast to listen to, but she goes through some like body language cues and those sorts of things, which is, you need to see it.
Visual medium.
Yeah. Thank you, Jenna. That's what I was trying to say, but I took 45 words to say it. So I appreciate you getting there much quicker on that one. But it is a good listen. But it is interesting that, you know, your personality is so heavily reflected by the people around you in particular, but also what you put out there in the first place. And I'm very well aware that if you were going to rate me on a scale of positive to negative, I'll probably slide slightly towards the negative side more of the two. But it is interesting that like over the past sort of week or so, I've made a conscious effort to be a little bit more open to people in general. And it's actually made me happier. And it kind of annoys me that it's made me happier. It's like
that
should be.
That's so sweet.
No, well, you know, probably more time with Zoe helped too. Like she got a new barbecue. So, you know, we're testing out some things,
that's sweet.
Be fair to say. But it is one of those things that how often, like, do we go into something with a really negative mindset on something where if we were actually just a little bit more positive and open to new opportunities, that could actually be really refreshing. And you think about how many kids you deal with in your spaces in particular, like you're about to come into trial season, Jenna, which I don't know how you do it, frankly, because you're about to see literally upwards of 1,000 kids in a really short amount of time and be the best version of yourself for all of them and be positive and all those sorts of things. And then you're going to get, oh, but why didn't my kid get picked? And it can just bring you straight back down the other end of the spectrum. But it is such an important part of it. It's amazing how just being more willing to be happy will make you happier in that space. I don't know. Any thoughts from either of you on that one? Like, I'm happy to go on a tangent if you got one.
I'm still processing it. I think it's it still comes down to perception as well. Like an example, I had a kid and I thought he was a bit of a brat of a kid, and then I really tried to understand who he was, why he's like that, and it just turned out that he was not enjoying his basketball, and I was a little bit to do with that in terms of where he plays and things like that. So I was open with him. I go, you don't enjoy your basketball, so what's going on here? And I really, I guess in a way, tried to find a way to really connect and like with this kid. And it was one of the best years ever. He just, they don't know how I turned him around. And I was like, I didn't turn him around. But I, it just made me think then. That's why I was just sitting quietly, because I was listening to what she was saying and I could remember that story of like how different the kid went. There's always something in there.
Yeah. Nick's phone was just buzzing on the table, everyone, in case you were wondering why.
It's the cable, it's the headphones, far out. But anyway, like, yeah, it just made me think about it then, how quickly he changed overnight, just based on my perception of him, and then having a question where almost like I could see right through him was a powerful moment. Yeah.
Interesting. What about you, Jen? Anything?
Oh, I feel like I just always try and see the best in people.
So you're a better person than me straight away.
Me also.
And I think as a coach, I try and believe in my athletes as much as I can, because I think they really feel that energy from me. And I think I had coaches who you just instantly – no, aren't feeling you,
yep.
And how that impacts you mentally to be able to not perform. And so then you're almost like leaning into what they think of you.
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you.
So I look back on those coaches that just had their full faith in me and how they got the best out of me. And so I think as a coach, I try and do that as much as I can. I lean into what they do really great, and I need them to know that I know what they can do great, because I think, that comes back tenfold to me. And that might sound really selfish with the way I'm saying it, but I just think that's really important.
Yep. No, I really like it.
It just really got me thinking, like, heaps. Like, my brain, you can see it's still ticking. Like, there's a lot of players as well at Casey. They like me coaching them, and I really think it's because I like them. And that's why, like,
makes sense.
It's an interesting one, yeah.
Yeah,
go back. And I think in any person you can find good in them if you choose to look
100%.
For that.
Yep, no, I like that a lot. All right, last one that we'll get on today. Phil Handy is talking about this one. This is at the end of one of his player camps.
You thank your parents for driving you, bringing you, and spending their money. That's not guaranteed. They don't have to do that, right? So this is a blessing that your parents did that for you. So make sure you show appreciation. How do you show appreciation? Make your freaking bed up in the morning. Don't leave your dirty clothes around the house. If you finish your food, pick your plate up, put it in the dishwasher, or put your food in the garbage. Those are real simple things, right? That's not major. It doesn't take money. Simple. Those are three things. Make your bed, pick up your clothes, put your dirty dishes away. You guys can do that?
It's coach.
Guarantee you, your parents will be a lot happier. They will appreciate your appreciation.
Could not agree with that more, obviously. Yeah. And I'm in a position where I have kids, still have to worry about that sort of stuff. But like, I think about when we're the last team training and usually everyone grabs their gear and goes straight away. I think about the kids that go around and pick up all the rubbish and leave it in a good spot. You remember those kids straight away, and it's not lost on you. And when you're walking out onto the court and it's like, hey, we need two teams up, and one of those kids is the one that picks up the trash and one of those kids isn't, throw the ball to the kid that picks up the trash, and you get to be offense first off on this one. So it comes back around at some point, but teaching that attitude of gratitude more than anything else is such an important part of what we do as coaches. And I mean, how do you, is there anything you've done with your players, Jenna, to sort of make them more grateful, I suppose, for what they have around them?
Wow, he really takes it to the next level. I really love what he just said, because I think, yeah, parents are under so much stress anyway to be able to get their athletes to, or their kids to, yeah, all the different things they have to go to, school and after, like all the different sports they play. I know after every single camp, we always have three thank yous. So it's the venue, yep, so making sure you're cleaning up after yourselves. It's the coaches, they're obviously taking out their time, and then making sure they thank their parents. But yeah, Phil Handy just takes that to a whole nother level, which I really love. And it gives the parents more time for some of their own things, which is, yep, also important. So if kids can take some of that burden off their parents for things that are so simple, yep, yeah, I might be using that at my next camp. Yeah,
really like it.
I used to touch on it afterwards, but after training, sorry, where I would just check where their bags are located, how they throw them down. Another thing was I would tell them how much those bags cost. And then, like, you know, if you work out how much parents spend, petrol,
yep,
picking up dinner because they probably don't have time to cook because they've grabbed another kid to another training set. Like, it's crazy how much they do. Let's, money aside, their time is out of control. And I think what he says, those three things, is really good too. Like, it's definitely something that I want to even just send to all our DOCs or something and just say, can we all just say these three things at the end of practice? Because I think it's really important.
No, I really like it. We haven't even got through all the clips, so there's a reasonable chance we're coming back and doing more of them next week.
I was really expecting Ted Lasso somewhere.
Well, it's one of the clips I didn't use.
Oh.
Like, it's, oh, you know, we're back next week, Jenna. Like, it's so there is more stuff coming. So you'll have to come back next week for a little bit of another longer episode, but we are running out of time. So, coaches, thank you very much for listening. Obviously, Jenna, Nick, thank you both very much for jumping into this one as well. Jenny, you're off very soon, are you not? Asia Cup?
Yes, we leave next Friday.
Next Friday. Yep. Super. Where are you off to?
Off to Malaysia with the Sapphires.
Excellent. Congratulations on the appointment, obviously. And best of luck with it. We'll all be watching. It'll be on the Phoebe YouTube channel, I'm going to say.
Sure will be.
Excellent. Number of Victorians in the group?
There are five Victorians in the group. And all the round games are 11:30 Malaysia time. So I think that's 1:30 Melbourne time. For
what, PM?
Yes.
Love it.
Yes.
It's when they get to Europe and they start playing at like 3 a.m. It kills me.
No, 1:30 p.m. Yeah.
Like it a lot.
Lunch break, just a bit later for everyone.
Like it. Good luck, Jenna. Hope it goes super well. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll catch everyone next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.